Hi, this is Scott Schober here out of Metuchen, New Jersey, Berkeley Varotronic Systems headquarters in Metuchen, New Jersey. How you doing? And I'm here with my partner, Craig Schober. You want to
Hey
introduce yourself
everyone.
there, Craig?
This is Craig. We're back at it again, coming at you from two different, very different coasts. This time I'm actually on the coast of Costa Rica, for the time being. Been living out here for a few months, enjoying the weather, the ocean, all that kind of stuff. But cybersecurity doesn't take a break for any of that. So we're back, and we got some great stories. What do you got going on this week, Scott?
A couple different things. So first, I want to thank our listeners. I've had many listeners that have reached out and say, hey, they're missing the episodes and we're trying to get back into the swing of things. We've just been hit with an onslaught of orders and business, and it's been just so crazy lately. And the other podcast, What Keeps You Up at Night, has been busy. We've been recording lots of episodes of that. And just the world of cybersecurity has been going, keeping us very busy the past few months. So we apologize for the delay, and we're glad we're back to do some other thanking. In addition, we want to thank our sponsor for this episode here. Dark Kryptonite stops ransomware, malware, and phishing in their tracks, eliminating cybercrime, fraud, and information warfare. Dark Kryptonite utilizes advanced blockchain algorithms and zero trust models. Learn more on darkkryptonite.com, and it's kryptonite spelled with a C. And I'm kind of excited with our sponsor working closer with them. I'm actually going to be doing some beta testing on some of their actual stuff in the weeks to come. So hopefully in the weeks to come, I could share some actual real world feedback about some of the latest advances in the offering that Dark Kryptonite has. They've been doing some pretty exciting stuff. So certainly stay tuned. Their website was just updated, so stop by and take a visit on that, darkkryptonite.com. Let's do a quick rundown. I'll just give you the teasers, the kind of the stories that I'd like to talk about today with you, Craig. The first one is the city of Dallas shut down their IT services after a ransomware attack. And some of the details on that story is taken from Security Affairs. They've got some great stories and coverage that they do. The next one, we're going to talk a little bit about, and everybody's talking about this, ChatGPT. And these are theme scan attacks, how they're on the rise. This comes from Palo Alto Networks reporting on this here, talking about some of these scams. We'll dive into that. And I'd love to get your thoughts a little bit more about ChatGPT. I've been playing around with it in the background, and I'm sure you have too, Craig, but it'd be interesting to get some of your takes. And finally, our third story there, this one's really got the headlines. This was the in the past few weeks. This comes from The Verge. Apple and Google are working together to limit AirTag stalking. And this really comes close to home for some of the developments that we do. So at the end of the end of the segment, we'll talk about that third story a little bit in detail and some of the exciting things here that we're doing at Berkeley Varotronics. But maybe to start us off, let's dive into this first story here from Security Affairs. The city of Dallas has shut down IT services after a ransomware attack. Man, this attack was pretty amazing because it has been in the headlines for the past few weeks. I mean, this started back on, around May 3rd, I believe, is when I first got contacted for this. And I've actually done maybe three interviews at least on this, maybe even more at this point, from different TV outlets, a couple of them with CBS right out of Texas even. And it's very interesting how this has really crippled the city of Dallas to an unbelievable extent here. And again, it was a ransomware attack, probably came in from a traditional, somebody clicked on a phishing email is what's suspecting of it. We don't know for sure yet. It appears that the city of Dallas has not, as of yet, paid the actual ransom. And as most cities and municipalities, as they're targeted and attacked, they try to revert to their backup system to restore. And it looks like over the past couple of weeks, they've had some success and they've gotten back E911 and some emergency services and police and so on and so forth. Things like the library were down. Other things in the municipality were down. So you can't take out a permit. They can't cut checks, things like that. And that was as recent as this week, even. So 3-4 weeks into it, and they're still not fully back up. So it shows the extent of this breach. And I don't know what your take is on it, Craig, but this one seems to be a little bit more widespread and more of an impact than some of the others that I've reported on in the past.
Yeah, what hit home for me was you did several appearances on some news networks, kind of going over the same details, kind of like you just did, and updating them on all those things. And in one of those, they had like a bunch of people. I think they were outside of a courthouse, and they physically couldn't get in. You know, they locked the doors and said kind of closed for business. And it you don't usually see cybersecurity affecting people in a physical way like that. You know, it's someone trying to access on their computer and, you know, the network's down. And then they say, oh, we'll try later. But in this case, like, people were going to pay parking tickets and fight all kinds of other summons in that local court system. And they literally couldn't open the door to these people and let in the lawyers and the judges and the bailiffs and all these employees because their computer systems were down due to this ransomware. So it really shows how the cyber world can affect the physical world. And I'm still fuzzy on the details of the story. I'm not surprised that they went the route of relying on their backups and refusing to pay. We're seeing more municipalities, more companies doing that, because that's actually a good thing. You know, it's not emboldening the hackers. It shows that they actually have a backup to use. I'm assuming they're not bluffing. They really have a backup. But I'm just surprised how long it's taking. It's taking weeks now. It's sort of, it makes it difficult to follow that plan because, you know, a lot of companies say time is money. And hey, if we're going to be down for a few weeks, even if we have the backup, even if we've done all the right things, and it takes this long to back up our data and get back up online, you know, maybe we should just pay the hackers. That way we'll get back online faster. You know, it sends a bad message. And I don't like that, but I don't know what you can do about it when you have a large government infrastructure, which apparently this must be. I guess it's just going to take weeks for this to kind of get back online.
Yeah, it could. Now, in part of it, as you do some of the digging, the part that's interesting, I think, with this, it mentions this particular strain of malware, malicious software that the Royal Ransomware was written in. They mentioned
Dark Side.
Yeah. And it was written in C++. And what they did was, I guess, they did it in a unique way that it mentioned somewhere that it deletes all the volume shadow copies to prevent data recovery. And then the ransomware encrypts the network shares that are found on the local network and the local drives with this AES algorithm. So it sounds like it's got layers that detect when you're trying to revert to a backup, if I understood right, that will then encrypt it. So you can't just, you know, wipe everything, throw in a backup, and you're good to go. It's got some levels of smarts in it here that may be making it a little bit difficult here. What this group, the Royal Ransomware group that's behind the attack, and there's been some miscellaneous things that are said and incorrectly reported, which makes it more and more confusing. But I shared a stat in one of the interviews that I did, and it mentioned that back in 2018, when one of the first ransomware attacks happened, this was down in Georgia, again, to, I think it was a municipality, they decided, hey, we're not going to pay the ransom, which I think was $1 million or something like that at the time. And we're going to resort to our backups. And it took them a couple of weeks. They were able to successfully eventually do that. However, the damage, the cost of the downtime and inefficiencies and everything else resulted in a $17 million cost to the municipality. So, and that was back in 2018. So fast forward 5 years later to an even bigger city of Dallas. Imagine what this cost is going to be. It's going to be in the tens of millions of dollars if they don't pay the ransom just to get all the services back up and restored. And I think that's something that's hard for everybody to understand. And that's in part of the reason you said it was surprising, like people are standing outside the court and they couldn't get in. And in my research, the part that was interesting is throughout the United States, Dallas is considered to be one of the more modern cities. They went through a digitalization period for a number of years where it's kind of a smart city, and things have all gotten away from pen and paper and manual, all digital. They're the 13th most advanced city in the United States from a digitalization standpoint, which is impressive. It gets things done efficiently and cost savings. However, that being said, when you're crippled with ransomware attack like this, you have nothing to go back to. You've abandoned your manual forms and your pen and paper, your old systems that used to work, be it inefficiently. Now you've got nothing to fall back on. And I think it takes you a lot longer to now migrate over to the modern stuff. That could be part of it.
Yeah, that sounds totally credible. Yeah. Not having those backup redundancies, as kind of old school, old tech they might be, sometimes it can, you know, save your bacon.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's scary. And then they did bring in, I'll give credit to the city of Dallas. They did react quickly. They did bring in experts, cyber experts from Microsoft and CrowdStrike immediately. They worked immediately with the FBI. They work with CISA, Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, as well as a joint cybersecurity advisory group. So they brought the people in that are experts in the field immediately. And I think that's what's important. However, this is a variant that is different than a lot of the traditional ransomware groups. The Royal Group doesn't work like traditional ransomware cyber criminals. Many of them are ransomware as a service, where they have software, they tweak it, they teach people how to perform these ransomwares, and they sell it and they get a piece of the action. This is really a private group. They don't have affiliates working with them or under them. So they're really behind it, and they're going to go out there to get maximum damage or collection, I guess, in return by working solo here. So they must be pretty confident, and they're looking for a pretty big payout. We don't know what the ransom is that was asked. And I guess in the weeks to come, we will find out, I'm sure, since this is probably the top ransomware story in the month of May.
Yeah. Sounds like a little bit of a conundrum. You have this sophisticated city, advanced technology that seemed to have done everything right. You know, they called, they had the backups, they called in all the experts, they refused to pay, and yet they're facing these major problems. It makes you wonder, going forward, you know, what is the best move for other cities? Do they follow this course of action? Because they're going to end up in the same boat if they do, possibly.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And the way I view it now, the cost for ransom in the days when we were first covering this type of stuff years back, more than 5 years ago, typical payouts for ransomware were $300, $400, $500, $600 equivalent in bitcoins. It was what I would call relatively small. And there were a lot of smaller targets. They've shifted, obviously, to municipalities and colleges and hospitals and infrastructure, a lot of different targets that cause more disruption and damage. And subsequently, they get a lot more take and ask millions of dollars. But the damage done, whether they pay the ransom, is going to cost you millions of dollars. If you try to resort to backup and don't pay the ransom, it's going to cost you millions of dollars in downtime and inefficiency. So either way, it's a lose-lose. And the cyber criminals typically are getting a payout or selling the stolen data or something. So they seem like they have a win-win no matter what happens, and use double extortion. So they'll exfiltrate the data immediately when they get on the network, and or the passwords and private information. Then they'll go and take that and sell it on the dark web. And then they'll also go for the ransom. So you kind of, it's a win-win if you're a cyber criminal. It's kind of like being a lawyer. Whether you win a case or lose a case, you still get paid. And it's not a knock against lawyers. It's just reality. They have it's a good way to make money. And the same thing for cyber criminals, where municipalities, colleges, infrastructure, you got to get it right every time and stop these guys. All they got to do is get it right once, and they're going to make money on you, the cyber criminals. So something needs to be done on a bigger scale, I think. And it needs to be done soon.
Yep. Something's got to give.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, great. Let's migrate into our second story here. Again, just to thank our sponsor again and mention them, shout out: Dark Kryptonite stops ransomware, malware, and phishing in their tracks, eliminating cybercrime, fraud, and information warfare. Dark Kryptonite utilizes advanced blockchain algorithms and zero trust models. You can learn more on darkkryptonite.com. Kryptonite is spelled with a C there. Our next story here comes again from Palo Alto Networks. ChatGPT themed scan attacks are on the rise. Before we even dive or mention any of this from the story, what's your take? Have you gotten to play at all with ChatGPT, Craig?
Oh, yeah. In fact, they just released an official iOS app for, so it's iPhone, obviously.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, it makes the login much easier, because sometimes I was having troubles. I don't know if it was the server node or something I was trying to connect to, but I've done it, you know, on my phone through the phone browser, done it on my laptop through the browser, and most of the time I was able to log in and it provided answers and things quickly, but sometimes it just bounced back and I couldn't get anywhere. The app so far has worked flawlessly, so I think that's my go-to for the time being. But to answer your question, yeah, I used it. I played with it a fair amount. And, the more you play with it, the more you see, you could kind of see how it makes the sausage almost. You know, you could tell when it's pulling quotes from the web and pretending like it came up with those originally, and when it's truly formulating sentences based on just keywords that you're asking for or the web is providing, you know. So wow. it's pretty smart, and it's definitely a time saver, and that's the thing that strikes me the most about it. Anyone who says it's the end of creativity, on the other extreme, it's not worth using and it's pointless, I think they're missing the entire point of it, and that it's just another tool, you know, like anything else. It's a tool, it's a powerful tool. So yeah, we're going to need regulations for it. We're going to need extra security measures taken to fight against it, because like this story shows, it's a tool that's going to be used by the masses eventually. And that means you're going to have a lot of misinformation, a lot of hacking tools, a lot of malware that are going to be created by ChatGPT and other competing, AI assistants. That's just the nature of tools, though. You know, there's nothing you can do about that. We live in a world full of tools, and so some of them you got to put locks on them. Some of them you got to, make it harder and harder for people to get their hands on them, because they're so destructive. Some of these tools. I don't know. What about you? Have you been playing with it at all?
I have been playing with it, and I find it kind of fascinating. I've been trying to ask it some different questions, especially tied around technology, innovation, cyber, and to try to get kind of a pulse on, what the response is. And it's interesting. Sometimes it aligns with my thoughts exactly, and sometimes it doesn't. And I'm almost challenging myself. And I think it's kind of cool, because it helps me look at things from a different perspective, especially when you're doing research. And I'm very accustomed to being on Google and doing research. And we all tend to be, we tend to go to our sources that we like a lot, be it for media, be it for research, be it for looking about innovation. And I think what this did, it opened up a different avenue of thought for me, which is kind of neat. The part that I think I like a lot about it is how quick to market, in a sense. Now, obviously, it's a little bit different, because it's open source, and its intent isn't exactly comparable to maybe tech companies or maybe even social media companies. But I thought an interesting thing, it came across a chart, and it contrasted ChatGPT, which launched basically last year or toward the end of last year, 2022. It took only 5 days and they reached a million users. And the chart contrasted that. If you looked at when Instagram was launched, this goes back in 2010, but still a very popular platform, it took two and a half months before they reached a million users. Spotify took 5 months. Dropbox took 7 months. Facebook took 10 months. Twitter took 2 years. Airbnb, which everybody knows about, took 2.5 years before they had 100 or 1 million users. Kickstarter, 2.5 years, Netflix, 3.5 years. So well-known names of successful tech, internet, online companies and social media companies and movie companies that every single household knows about and probably uses took much, much longer to grow a million user base. Now they're at, geez, well over, what is it, 100 million users in the history for ChatGPT in such a short time. So they kind of hold that record. And that was only, what, two months after launch, they hit 100 million users. It's staggering. And that's part of the reason, I think, why you said you couldn't get on. I had the same problem. There's too many users. I don't think the servers can actually handle the volume of it. And I think that's the part that's so amazing. Now, the interesting part about this story here is the growth of the app and how fast it became widely used and accepted. Well, obviously, what happens, though, is the malicious side of things. And they start talking here about researchers stated that scammers are creating fake ChatGPT websites. So they resemble everything, the look and the feel of traditional ChatGPT websites. But when you go on this site that you think is real, but it's really a fake, you're now redirected to another site. And of course, they got malware, malicious links in there. And once you click on it, it's going to drop to your computer, and then the fun begins. And that's very dangerous, as well as all the other type of things where they're trying to use different types of scams to steal our personal information, our financial information, use it as opportunities to pop up ads and different things that you click on where it'll drop malware onto your computer. So that happens often. Why? When if you got millions and millions of people trying to get on the same website at once, now suddenly a fake site appears, maybe in a Google search or something. You click on that, you go to this fake website, and you're so focused on what you're trying to do and enter information to find out on ChatGPT, you're not realizing you're on a fake site, and you're suddenly being fooled, and you're giving away information when questions come up, or you bounce over here to another site and you click on a link not realizing it. So they're really taking advantage of people's desire to use this platform, which is okay. That's it. I don't know if you had any other thoughts on ChatGPT, but I think it's just the concern I have is such a platform that everybody wants to be on. It's going to be used for scams, and it's only going to get worse. This is only the start, I think.
Yeah, I agree. This is early days. 200 million users is nothing. I think they're going to break that billion user mark pretty soon because the ChatGPT engine is going to be embedded into everything, you know.
Yeah.
Microsoft is there, they own, have a stake in it already. They're going to integrate it into Bing. Google's got their own competing assistant called Bard, but that probably won't stop it from appearing in many other websites and apps and other companies using ChatGPT. So it's going to become the aggregate of all the uses is easily going to hit a billion users. And I think what we're seeing now is really just kind of, it's not fear mongering. It's warnings for things that are just starting to happen or really haven't happened yet, which is necessary. But you don't want to yell about the sky is falling when it really isn't. But I think it's a fair assumption to say that if things go horribly wrong, the sky will fall. So we better get on that alarm system. Better get that alarm system and warning system up and running now, so that we can nip it in the bud.
That's a really good point there. And it's going to be exciting things what comes out of it, because I think you kind of intimated at the point when you first used ChatGPT, I think everybody goes in with a thought like, what is this, like just another search engine or this or that? You don't know what it does until you try it. So if you haven't tried it, I encourage people, give it a try and put in some interesting things. I even just put in a search for myself or ask a question about myself to see what comes back. And I was surprised. And I said, this is pretty impressive. And I tried some other questions and things that were a little deeper, a little more technical, that may require reading of several research papers or analyzing patents and things like that, which I often do. And I was given a very logical plain text answer to my exact question. It kind of scared me. I said, wow, it sounds like there's a genius at the other end that just is listening and responding just to my question and understands the context of it. So it was a little eerie feeling at first, which is kind of useful though. You see the value of it immediately.
Oh, a few weeks back, this kind of speak to the disruption that we're talking about is going to happen. A few weeks back on the A Verge podcast, Nilay Patel, who's I think their editor in chief, had a really good discussion about the future of search and how ChatGPT is really starting to disrupt that already. I recommend everyone listen to that. But it was, it's amazing when you think about the stuff we not take for granted, but that we're so used to it, and how things like advertisers are going to have to get used to it, because when you do a search now, you get hundreds of responses. You get those 10 on the first page, and you don't want to ever be on the second or third page, or you don't usually go into and search those things. But though all those pages and all of those links each have different values for advertisers to be placed on. And when you have a sole source, you have ChatGPT, Google is prepping this as we speak there for Bard and whatever else they're going to call their future endeavors. They're going to have, someone's going to say, I need to know something about this. And they're not going to be presented with options like you get now. You're going to get one response from one kind of AI, and it's going to say, here's what you need. Now, do you trust that? Do advertisers trust that? How do you monetize that? Like the entire system, the entire nearly $1 trillion system of advertising on the web is going to be turned on its head. So there's just so many ramifications and things we haven't even thought of yet, but that's what makes it exciting. I think this is one of the first times in a long time that the hype, when it kind of wears off, you're still excited about it. You can't say the same thing for VR and 3D TV and all these like kind of gadgets, foldable
phones, all that stuff.
Yeah, all that stuff is exciting for a few days or even weeks, and then it just becomes either part of normal life or it becomes the joke of the tech industry because it failed. But this ChatGPT, we keep seeing stories, and every time I read a news story about it, I'm kind of re-excited about it. And so I go try it again, and I'm like, oh, I never thought to ask it this. Let me see what it thinks about that and all these things. So it's kind of the tech story that keeps on giving, which is why, we're getting beat over the head with it. And that makes sense. You don't want too much saturation or oversaturation of these things. But if it keeps delivering cool tech experiences, I think that justifies all of the stories,
Absolutely. Yeah. And just speaking to your point, you made a really interesting point about it's like a disruptor. And what does it disrupt? I mean, a lot of things, but in particular, I think just the online advertising. And in particular, I would think that immediately a business model such as Google, and I guess the parent is Alphabet, the market capitalization is $1.5 trillion. Only slightly behind, I guess, Apple, Microsoft, and Amazon, all these trillion-dollar behemoths now. When you think about Google and especially their search engine of business, I mean, it's a couple of years ago, it peaked well over $100 billion just from the search engine side of the house. That tells you how powerful for people that are doing SEO and paying for advertising for search engine terms, how big of a disruptor ChatGPT will be. I just wish they didn't name it ChatGPT because it's hard to say for me, but it's going to be exciting because it's really getting all big tech companies to rethink the way advertising is done and the way search is done. And it's kind of a new exciting hybrid. I mean, I never forget the days back in the old, the old dial up, and I had AOL for email. And when the internet first started down in the basement, and I was using Google, and I just was typing in random things showing my wife, and I was like, I can't believe how amazing this is. And every once in a while, I'll stop, I'll be on Google, and I'll just think for a second. I'll say, remember that so many years back when the internet first took off and I was playing with Google, and how amazing things have transformed and how much better it's gotten and faster, and it starts to think like we do. Well, this is now the next generation or the next level of things.
Yep. It's exciting times.
Yeah. Yeah. Exciting times. Well, let's revert to our third story here, but just as a reminder, again, we want to thank our sponsors, Dark Kryptonite. They stop ransomware, malware, and phishing in their tracks, eliminating cybercrime, fraud, and information warfare. Dark Kryptonite utilizes advanced blockchain algorithms and zero trust models. Learn more at darkkryptonite.com. And that's kryptonite spelled with a C. So this final story, it really crosses our business world a lot, I think. It comes from The Verge. Apple and Google are working together to limit AirTag stalking. And love to certainly get some of your thoughts on this, Craig. And I think for me, probably the part that stands out the most, not the need of it, because yeah, there's been a need. We know that firsthand. Just the fact that you see Apple and Google have teamed up. That was kind of a shocker to me. I can't remember any other thing this big where Apple and Google were teaming up or partnering. Do you?
No, not with a specific announcement for a specific technology. We've seen them partner along with other companies for things like home automation, and that those standards, but this is more of a specific technology that, you know, Google hasn't even released their version of AirTags yet. Apple's AirTags, I can only assume, I'm not sure if they released numbers on that, but I can only assume it's wildly successful just based on the use case, the power of it, and of course all these kind of negative stories that leak into the press. It just shows that everyone's using it for all types of things, and some of those things are going to be mischievous, some of those things are going to be downright illegal and dangerous too.
I think I read one article, this is about a month ago, that somebody estimated that Apple probably sold over 100 million AirTags already, and that kind of instantly caught my mind. And we know what's an AirTag sell for, right around $30 a piece. You could do the math simply. If there isn't even truth in that, plus or minus, if you take 100 million times $30, that's a lot of money. You're talking billions of dollars that Apple has made just with that one little quarter size AirTag alone. And the part that's so amazing is how well it works within the ecosystem and the Find My app. It's pretty incredible. Now, of course, we're talking about the converse. We're talking about in the hands of bad guys when they're used for stalking and tracking individuals. And that's really the thrust of this article. What Apple and Google are kind of teaming up to do together is create an industry specification that combats all the inherent safety risks of misusing AirTags or any other tracking device, I guess, for that matter. But it's really these two companies that have the dominant platforms, be it on Apple with their iOS or Google with their OS and their tag. They're going to be introducing a tag. And there's rumor, I guess, that the tag is had a crazy name. It was like Guruju or whatever that was. I forget, from whatever movie or wherever it came from. But the latest I heard is it's going to be called Nest Tag or something like that. I guess because the division of Nest that Google owns, and it probably makes sense. And I saw a picture of what it might look like. I don't know if it was an actual stolen photo or somebody with creativity just created what the tag looked like. But it was an interesting article that was kind of spilling some of the pre-release information before it all comes out. So if there's any truth behind all of these things, Google is really heavily investing into this Bluetooth low energy tag market because they see the success that Apple has, and then certainly what Tile has as well. So it's going to be a large growing market space, I think, for many tech companies with improved features, hopefully some improvements for safety for its users so they don't feel stalked or tracked.
Yeah. In this, I think it was in this article, or let's see, they posted a essentially the specifications or the proposed specifications that they believe it's based on. It wasn't like a final spec or anything, but they're saying this is probably how it's going to go. And I skimmed them over, and it didn't look really any different than the things and the guidelines that Apple has already implemented. So that kind of leads me to believe that this is more of a, it's not so much a, that they're working together to limit stalking, but rather they're joining forces to improve the experience on both their platforms. You know, you have Apple, who right now the main complaint is if you have an AirTag tracking you and you're an Android user, you don't know it. You know, you have to download a specific app and have it running in the background, and no one's doing that. So you're basically out of luck, and those are the majority of users. So if you combine forces with Google, suddenly you can get both of their Find My apps, or whether it's built into the OS the way Apple does it, or, you know, I'm not sure about those details, but it's going to, obviously, the point is that whether it's a Google tag or an Apple tag or a tile, even because there's provisions for third party, regardless of the tag, you're going to get a notification in your on your phone without having to run a special app and do all this stuff. You know, and on the other end, you have Google. They get the benefit of working with Apple, who's already got a giant user base. Now they combine, you have all these Android phones out there, all these iOS devices out there. So your footprint, your coverage is the entire planet, because you can't go anywhere these days without someone with either an iPhone or you know, an Android phone out there. So you have full coverage. And yeah, of course, you can provide stalking notifications and warnings, but Apple's already doing that. And if you warn people too quickly, then it becomes an advantage for thieves. They steal things, they're instantly, you know, and they got an AirTag hidden in them, or a Google tag or whatever tag. And now within 20 minutes of stealing that bike or whatever they took, backpack, wallet, they're getting a notice that, hey, there's a hidden AirTag in following you. So the thief can, now that they know it's there, they can easily find it, pull it out, and voila, you have an easier theft. So they're all the tech companies are always playing this kind of back and forth with, well, we want to alert people as quickly as possible that it's a stalker, but we don't want to alert anyone too quickly, because otherwise it becomes a bonus for anyone that's looking to steal something. So they end up putting these kind of artificial limits, I suppose. I don't think it's a technical limitation. I believe it's an artificial limitation. You'll never get a stalking warning that an AirTag is stalking you sooner than 3 to about 5 hours from when it begins happening. And that kind of, you know, brings us into our take on the problem and our solution that we recently introduced on Kickstarter, and we're going to market soon for a general consumer audience, and that's called Blue Spoof Lite. Do you want to tell anyone listening a little more about that, Scott?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is a shameless plug, certainly, but I think it's so interesting. And the fact that I've had many cybersecurity conferences request presentations on this, because not enough is known. I think I've done 7 presentations already, and I've got a couple more lined up. Another one on June 1st at ISC Squared, CCOM at Kane University, which I'm kind of excited about. And I'll be certainly talking about stalking when digital and physical worlds collide. And I have another couple shows coming up also on the Cyber Hero Network about that as well. I think that's on June 15th on LinkedIn Live at 11 a.m. So, you know, keep the lookout, and you could kind of join in on some of these conversations. Some are live events and some are virtual. But the product, Blue Sleuth Lite, which is interesting, is I think we've done a lot of research, especially heavily last year before we decided to start up the development of a a focused, low-cost product to address the problem, as you mentioned. And it's not just AirTag. There's millions of other types of Bluetooth low energy tags out there. Anything from, I think we mentioned Tile, Samsung Smart Tag, of course the Air Tags,
Pebblebee, Chipolo. Yeah,
the list goes on and on.
I see, yeah, new ones every day. New ones are coming out of the woodwork.
I think there's 20 or 25 that I identified. One day I sat down and actually counted them all, and I was astounded how many are out there, and they're all fairly cost effective, anywhere from $10 to about $30, and they've got various features. And of course, you know, Apple AirTag, I think, got a lot of interest, especially because of the ecosystem. It works with the 1.5 billion iPhones out there with their existing Bluetooth low energy, and that's used as a conduit to help communicate and locate the actual tags without, you know, the users of other iPhones don't know it. Not that it's compromising your data or security, but your phone is part of the ecosystem. It's being used. And I think that's the brilliance of it. The negative side is really what you talked about. And that's what we tried to address in the Blue Sleuth Lite. And I think we did a really good job, is how can you get an alert much quicker? We've all heard the stories about models walking down the street and somebody slips an AirTag in their purse or at the bar, and they get a notice the next day or later that night. The problem is the stalker already stalked or tracked the person or did what they want to do without them knowing it. To some extent, this problem has always existed. It's just, it was a little bit more of a tech challenge. People would take a GPS tracker, slap it on your car, and with an app or with software on their computer, they could see anywhere you are. When your car starts moving, they get a ping and they see your latitude and longitude. It's overlaid on a Google Earth map, and they basically track you. But now imagine it done on a maybe a little bit closer personal level without having to take out a contract with Verizon or AT&T, T-Mobile, whoever, to pay a monthly fee for the GPS tracking. Now it's done for free with the iPhone that's in your pocket. And the tracker doesn't cost you $100 like a GPS tracker might, but rather $30 for an AirTag. Suddenly the whole game changes. On top of that, the battery lasts almost a year in some cases. It's the size of a quarter, so it's much easier to hide. So for all those reasons is why we see the misuse of AirTags and other trackers being heavily adopted by creeps and weirdos and stalkers and things like that. So that's what the Blue Sleuth Lite really addresses, giving you instant alert that there's a potential tracker that's traveling with you. So if you're in the car and suddenly the Blue Sleuth Lite beeps or vibrates and the screen flashes, you look down and you say, "Ooh," and it tells you, it doesn't just come up with some vague address. It says AirTag, it tells you the MAC address, it tells you the signal strength. And there's even indicators how long it's been traveling with you. So now you've actually got some smarts and a low cost little device, a little bigger than the size of your key fob to unlock your car, with a full screen and navigation with a jog wheel on there. To me, it's a pretty exciting piece of technology, and we sell it for under $500. And as you mentioned, we kind of got the feedback from the community. That's why we did it through Kickstarter, because we've got great feedback from innovators and technologists and users and people that are also in a lot of these different groups that are fighting stalkers and trackers and other illegal use of technology and privacy advocates. They gave us some awesome feedback over the past few months that we're incorporating in this device. We've already sold over 100 devices. Next month, we're going to be starting to ship out devices, and it's really exciting technology. I can't get more excited about it than in some of our other recent products that we, you know, have launched. Yeah, they're exciting, they're fun, but this one touches so many lives, and we've gotten such amazing feedback before we even shipped unit one. That to me is awesome.
Yeah, unlike any other product we've done before. I mean, we're mostly business to business, or, you know, kind of business to government, our sales. We don't sell, we'll sell a product directly to a consumer if they have a use for it and they have the money, but we don't find that too often that happens. But this is a different product, so we had to approach it differently. Thus, the Kickstarter community, some of the packaging considerations, and even some of the the UI, the layout. We have a pro and a basic mode. So some people are more comfortable with something that looks like they would see on their cell phone in terms of signal strength and measurements. Whereas other people, they don't want to see that. They only want measurements in numerical dBm, and we have that for them too. So we had to kind of cover all our bases on this product, but I think that's one of the reasons why it's going to be a success.
I think so. And certainly if people want to find out a little bit more about the Kickstarter campaign is over. I mean, you could speak to that. I forget what our goal was. I think it was around $18,000 or so.
Yeah, we more than doubled that in our final.
It was close to $40,000 that came in with backers. And I even received multiple calls from prospects and colleagues in the business world and even customers saying, hey, I saw your Kickstarter ended. I really wanted to be part of it. How can I get a unit? And I said, well, once we get the units and the commitments met from Kickstarter, then we're going to be selling it to the general community. So we can certainly provide you a quote, but you can't get a unit immediately. So that told me if the Kickstarter campaign continued to go, we probably would have been north of $50,000 or who knows how much just in unit sales and commitments and backers, because it really got some great attention. And I know it was picked up on Fox News and a bunch of other magazines picked it up. And a lot of it tied to the stories and the problems of tracking and stalking, much of which I think is a lot of these wackos trying to stalk and track women, which is kind of sad. And there's a lot of great groups out there doing some good stuff. And hopefully we can work in conjunction with them to try to help curb this problem of illegal tracking and stalking of people, and especially the weirdos and creepos that are using misusing technology, I should say.
Yeah. And you said, you know, that the audience for this, the possible use cases and customers, it's so large. And as someone who spends most of my time marketing our products, I'm usually trying to kind of create the narrowest silo to market a product to. You want to say, this is the perfect target audience, and so I'm going to approach it this way with this product and that kind of thing. But with Bluetooth Lite, it's tricky because the audience the use cases, it just seems to keep growing when I think about it. You know, case in point, I did a little kind of preview email blast of it the other day. Somebody writes back to me and they start asking me questions about it. I thought they were asking me questions because maybe they were just interested in the technology in general, or they were interested in getting it for themselves, or maybe his wife, or you know, somebody he knows. And it turns out this guy is a marketer himself, and he's trying to sell me lists of people who could potentially need this. And so he said, hey, I got a list of female realtors in Florida. And it's actually a really big list. It's like over 100,000. He said, wow. Do you think these professional business women would be, you know, and this is before I realized he was a marketer. So he's asked me questions, and I'm like, well, you know, it actually makes sense now that I think about it, because they're driving around, they're professional, they're women, first of all. So that's a high stalking target. They're professionals, so they have money, they have nice vehicles, let's assume. And they're driving, and on top of that, they're driving around to these homes. Some of these homes are not occupied by anyone. And so now you have this, someone could slip a tag into their vehicle, track their route. Now they know where all these homes are. Maybe they're occupied, maybe they're not. But in any case, a lot of them still have valuables in them. So now you have a stalker with the ability to follow all these people around going to homes that could be robbed and, you know, worth. And suddenly I'm like, yeah, that's a use case right there. And he's like, oh, well, I'll sell you a list of all these people. And I'm just like, do I buy this? I don't even know what to do with this information now. I'm not sure how to proceed, but it just shows that the market for such a device, our device, you know, AirTags, all the whole ecosystem that's been created, it's so big. Yeah, it just keeps growing. Yep.
Yeah, I'll give you another strange use case that kind of came up, and it didn't happen once. It didn't happen twice. We've had three inquiries, and as a result, we've already their customers that are buying equipment from us, and they will be buying the Bluetooth Lite, they said, as soon as we fulfill our Kickstarter campaign. And these are actually businesses, large businesses that go out to sites and quote, and they could be construction companies, roofing companies, a whole bunch of different types of companies that provide physical work and services at a particular spot for a homeowner, be a business on the commercial side. And in these three different cases, they all identified that they're going out to job sites, they're quoting, and they find shortly after they quote, their competition gets the job and they don't know how they're doing it. They highly suspect that they're being tracked and they can't find any GPS trackers. And they're more likely suspecting that, hey, it's probably an AirTag they slipped on their truck behind the license plate or in the fender or a magnet underneath or some other means when they're not looking. And they just basically pull up their iPhone and say, oh, it looks like, you know, John Smith of XYZ Construction is going out to bid again today. Let's start it up and go follow him and then go in there and quote him. And I thought that was kind of interesting concept, but it shows you the use cases are much wider than you would ever think for using or, again, misusing simple tracking tags. And that's probably explains why Apple has sold well over 100 million AirTags so far in such a short period of time. And if you take that percentage and look at those that might misuse the technology, it's pretty high, and hence why we're seeing such a demand for our Blue Sleuth Lite.
Yeah, and I think that's also the reason why this story exists in the first place. I think Apple and Google are trying to get ahead of the problem. Now, Apple might have gotten caught in a lot of, you know, negative press from their AirTags, but they were, you know, they came right after Tile in terms of these personal trackers. So they're going to get, you know, the brunt of the, they're going to get the arrows, you know, as they say, you know, the pioneers. Google's coming in and saying, hey, we can, you know, expand your coverage by, and let's unite forces. But more importantly, let's make some rules for ourselves and third party tracker manufacturers and say, here's best practices. Here's how to set, here's the settings to avoid stalking. And, you know, this way they say, this way they can avoid the pain that's going to come from the fines and the regulators clamping down on them. Because they could say, hey, we did our due diligence. We published best practices. We're working together to keep everyone safe. So that's the best we can do. And I really think that they wanted to get out ahead of this before things get even worse.
I think that's a really good point, because if you start digging into the stories, and I've read a couple hundred of them tied, especially while we were doing this development with our Blue Sleuth Lite and AirTags and so on and so forth and other tags, a lot of it's tied to litigation. There are tons and tons of cases that are being litigated about this one track that, you know, this person illegally, and it goes to court. There's also, it's tying up not just the legal system, but it's tying up a lot of police activity. If you go to any, even a local police station, and ask them, have you had any reports of AirTags being used with stalkers? Guess what? 10, 20, 50, some of these agencies and law enforcement groups have been buried in case after case trying to do research. And unfortunately, they don't have a lot of tools and technology to help them. We too have been contacted by many police forces already, and some even asking, hey, could you sweep our vehicles? We want to make sure we don't have AirTags. And somebody, some bad guys aren't tracking us. So when we pull up at the scene, they already take off because they know what's going on. So I think we're going to see more and more use cases pop up, and unfortunately more and more misuse of tag technology overall, just because it's so effective, low cost. Everybody has a device, a smartphone these days, that's really, that runs the app that you can control all this with. So it's going to be probably the most popular thing out there, at least in 2023. Unless things change. And I have downloaded the proposed spec between the partnership of Apple and Google and read through some of it. Some of it is not that exciting, and some of it was, had some smart ideas and some unique uses of the technology. And I think it's certainly things that we're also going to be able to use to have our tools provide even further information to end users, which I think is really the important factor. And a distinguishing thing for us, each tech company, Apple, everybody's tied to their iPhone if they want to scan and look for AirTags. But what if they want to look for a Chipolo or a, you know, or whatever, Samsung Smart Tag or this or that, or vice versa? If you're using Android and you want to look at an AirTag, you got to get a special app and hit scan continually just to see that. It's hard to have a whole bunch of apps and a lot of different phones and operating systems and be able to see all the tags and get instant alerts. Whereas our little Blue Sleuth light, the beauty of it is it's constantly scanning and looking at all Bluetooth low energy devices, tags, as well as other things such as AirPods and other Bluetooth low energy devices. And that's kind of cool. And you can actually sort and say, I only care about tags, or I only care about everything. Give me tags and all Bluetooth low energy devices. So it really gives you some flexibility to just sniff around you and kind of get a sense of privacy and actually hunt down suspicious tags if they are out there.
Yeah. It's a good solution. It's the right solution at the right time. You know, now maybe Apple and Google will dial in some, you know, something better that alerts people quicker. Maybe they'll make our product obsolete, but you know, we want to serve the market while we can, while there's a need. So that's why we kind of fast track this product.
Yeah. Especially with the notion, bad guys take technology and tweak it to make it really hard to find. For example, some of the answers, if you go to Apple's website and a lot of these other forums, and these other tags are guilty of this too, they say, hey, you know, don't worry, you'll be alerted by hearing a beep from the tag if it's following you or it's suspicious. So you have an audible alert. That's great. Well, how do cyber criminals and stalkers and trackers counter that? They simply pop the unit open and they cut the speaker out. So there's no noise that it can now enunciate, and they sell it. They take a $30 tag and they sell it on Etsy and eBay for $70. And that's perfect for criminals, because now, you know, an unsuspecting individual that's being tracked will never hear that audible alert. And that's a problem. And there again, we have our solution. We're constantly scanning 24/7 when it's on and give you an instant alert. And yes, we'll beep and we'll vibrate and we'll flash on the screen if a tag is traveling with you, whether it's AirTag or Samsung or Tile or anyone, or even the new Google one coming out. So we certainly have some distinct advantages. Even as great companies like Apple and Google partner, they're going to make it safer for people, which I applaud. But it still gives us, I think, a good market share for devices to deal with the hundreds of millions of tags that are out there currently and more to come, as well as the limits going between company to company, where we see everything, not just a particular tag or two.
Yeah, and we always talk about layers of security on this podcast. Absolutely. And in the books and live events, all things. And it just reminds me that, you know, the criminals are trying to strip the layers of security out of AirTags by cutting the speakers and by you know, placing them in strange places to make stalking easier. We're coming in and we're trying to add the layers of security through different alerts, different features that allow people just that, you know, an ease of use. And hopefully you'll see that little blip on your screen. You'll see that it's an AirTag or whatever it is. And through the signal strength and through a quick search, hopefully you'll be able to discover that tag and stop the stalker, you know, dead in their tracks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting too. We've been contacted by numerous executive protection detail as well. If they're watching politicians and celebrities, high net worth individuals, they have a huge concern that their client might be tracked or stalked. And that's part of keeping somebody safe. So their vehicles are going to be sweeped with our devices and their personal space and their rooms and their hotel rooms and so on and so forth. So it's kind of an exciting little niche that we're finding out is not so little. And I think the months to come is certainly going to help us appreciate how big of a problem it is. And I'm hoping that we can make a dent in really making it tough for the stalkers and bad guys out there. Well, great story. Glad we got to chat a little bit about that, Apple and Google working together to limit AirTag stalking. We had a nice discussion on ChatGPT there. And then also the poor city of Dallas slowly getting back to things after they suffered such a massive ransomware attack. Great to reconnect with you, even though we talk throughout the week, but more so through connecting together and talking through this podcast. I think even though we've got some miles between us now, you down in Costa Rica and I'm up here in New Jersey. Want to thank our sponsor again as we close out the segment. Dark Kryptonite stops ransomware, malware, and phishing in their tracks, eliminating cybercrime, fraud, and information warfare. Dark Kryptonite utilizes advanced blockchain algorithms and zero trust models. You can learn more on their website, which was just recently updated, and it looks awesome. Check it out, darkkryptonite.com, kryptonite spelled with a C. And just another mention that this podcast is available on YouTube, Spotify, Google, iHeart, Apple, Amazon, and more. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and review our podcast. We really appreciate that. And for questions and comments, DM us on Twitter. It's simply at ScottBVS, or visit scottshober.com for more information. You could even send a message through that website there as well, and I'll get that. And I am a real person, and I will respond. If we read your question or comments on the podcast, we're going to send you your choice of a signed copy of Hacked Again, Cybersecurity is Everybody's Business, or Senior Cyber. So again, we want to thank everybody for listening, and tune in next time for a new episode packed with cyber news, tips, and again, stay safe. This is Scott Schober from New Jersey here, headquarters of Berkeley Veritronics, signing out.
Hey, Kirk Schober here from Costa Rica, and I'm signing out, and we'll talk to you all soon. Stay safe. All right.
Take care. Stay safe. Cyber, coast to coast, with your hosts, Scott and Craig Schober.